go. This is the Tom and Curly Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Do appreciate it. Lots of news to get to. You write to us at MyNorthWest.com. Come to the State Roofing text line at 98973. Looks like coming through the roof there, Tom. Right on through the roof.
All right, then.
That's a hole in the roof that we have so you can get in, and then State Roofing fixes it. All right? Okay. Got it? Dive in. All righty, here we go. More than 420,000 voters have already cast their ballots in the Washington primary. So they get this. When did you get yours in the mail? I got mine.
Late last week, I think.
Normally, it's going to be older people vote early.
Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
And then the younger people come in. Then you see all the young folks get in there at the last couple minutes.
That was certainly the case. That's how, Shama Sawan came from way behind election night and caught her opponent in the upcoming recounts.
Yep.
So what's amazing about this is we're still 2 weeks away. I mean, Tuesday... 2 weeks from Tuesday, I think, was the deadline. Then we have that many people already putting in their votes. 9.4% of registered voters turned them in right away. 7% of King County voters. The other number was from the entire state. 220,000 votes cast on the Democrat side, which not that it's surprising. I'm more stunned by, although this isn't really going to be much news, 185,000 votes have already been cast for Trump.
Yeah, we had the same thing in New Hampshire. Barack Obama was running in the second time in New Hampshire. Only got like 45,000 votes.
Yeah.
Donald Trump, 110,000. It's people's way of saying, screw you.
Yeah.
Voting anyway. There you are for Trump.
And that would explain why they're voting early, because they're not weighing anything.
They know what's going on, yeah.
Yeah. So, like a lot of Democrats, I'm somebody who's going to wait until after Super Tuesday, because I don't want to waste my vote.
Yeah.
Because I think there's going to be a big shake down and shake out of the Democratic candidates post that. And since we are the first... state after that, us in Michigan, that's when I think more people will end up voting on the Democratic side.
I thought it was interesting that 13,000 people basically made their votes null and void.
Yes!
On there, you have to say, and even Kim Wyman said the other day, I think, on Dory's show, that I don't like it either.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to declare, but you have to declare your party on the outside of the envelope. So some people are like, you know what? I'm not going to declare.
Yeah.
They send the thing in, 13,000 people, so now their vote doesn't count.
And my guess is there'll be more than 13,000 that don't do that. Now, here's why you have to do it. This is for the parties. If you are declaring this is a Democratic primary and a Republican primary, so you have to declare that I'm a Democrat, even if it's just for a day, if you want to weigh in on the Democratic side or Republican on the Republican side. And that's not neither here nor there. In fact, a lot of Democrats are mad at Kim Wyman for saying that, well, all these things will be published. We'll be able to write in. So if John Curley says that he's a Democrat on his thing because he wants to screw around with the Democratic candidates, like the Republican Party in South Carolina is suggesting people do now. They want everybody to vote for Bernie to help screw up the Democratic Party, that it will be forever marked down that John Curley declared himself a Democrat because they are public roles, and so they have access to that. That's what people are objecting to. And Kim Wyman says, I have no a choice. If it is a public document, if you do mark yourself that way, we have to officially... treated as such.
What did you have her sound? Because she was on, I think, on Dory's show. Dory's got knee surgery. He's coming back, I think, next week. Todd Herman's doing a good job filling in for him. And I think he interviewed her. And the point that Herman brought up was, wait a minute, the party, this is a private institution. That's the public part. That's the Republican Party. It's a Democrat. Okay, then there's a second layer, which is the public service. I'm the taxpayer, and you're supposed to take my vote and do this work. Why am I doing work for a party? Why am I being in any way paid by giving them information about what I want? Why is the party tied in on this?
Okay, because you have the choice of who that party is going to nominate. So most of us think that's worth it. That's the trade-off. And if you don't want to have that trade-off, you don't have to vote in a primary. There's no law that says you have to. If you want to have influence, you have to at least declare for the day that I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican.
But you then declare... for the day, like you wanted to screw around at all. I can put in there,
I'm
Democrat Bernie.
That's right.
Does it then follow me for the rest of my life where I feel the need to take money from rich people and give it to poor people?
I would hope so, but I'm afraid not.
Oh, okay. Do I then also want to force kids to be in public schools that fail?
Just be on the record for all time that on this particular day, in this particular year, you declared yourself a Democrat. It doesn't mean anything to anybody. Nobody's going to go through the voter rolls and find out who you are or who you weren't.
Even later on when I run for Senate?
Well, yeah, then it would happen, of course.
Did you find it, Jacob? Okay. Okay.
I guess he wasn't looking that hard.
No, he's looking. It's not that easy. You put in Kim, and Wyman put in
I think
Dory.
We already
So you weren't talking about the fact that she decided
she didn't want to do it either. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think
yeah.
she didn't sign it.
That's right, because she doesn't want to be beholden to a party. And you know why? Because she, if she marked herself as a Republican, that would out her as a Trump supporter.
Oh.
This election, I'm going to actually not participate in protest. I'm very frustrated that we don't have an unaffiliated option.
There you go. There, see?
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm not sure that's worth waiting for.
I thought it was more interesting.
And the reason she doesn't care is because Trump's going to be the nominee of her party.
Mm-hmm.
So she might want to risk putting her name down if she had an important choice to make on the Republican side, like Ted Cruz or Donald Trump.
Let's see. Danny Westing says that when the national media came out here Bernie at the Tacoma Dome, they were shocked. I couldn't believe it. Wow. So that's what a real socialist looks like. They were like, oh, there's like socialist light. We should put the word, Democratic socialist. Which doesn't mean anything, but that's a word that sort of softens the word socialist. But you get someone like a full socialist, like Shama Sawant, where the people should take over Boeing and turn planes into buses, that type of nonsense. They had never seen it full-throated.
We need a powerful socialist movement to end all capitalist oppression and exploitation.
And the people from the Washington Post are like, oh my God, this is the warm-up act.
Yeah. Our immediate task is to go all out and win for Bernie.
There you go. All right.
She said, Danny Westing's point was, he says, welcome to the Seattleization of politics. This is what we deal with on a regular basis. He is talking about the hollowing out of the parties. The big loser in this whole effort between Trump and perhaps Bernie is that the parties have no say or sway anymore. The center is not holding. The center is like, you know, moving to their respective corners. And this is a good example of that. I love the fact that the national reporters who think they know it all come out here and they're shocked by, what do they call it, the Soviet of Seattle or something, Soviet state of Washington at one point. Anyway, the right-wing headline, now this is more predictable. Here's the quote. Bernie rally features Trotskyite Seattle council member whose party wants to seize control of banks.
It's just true.
Like, you know, that's the socialist alternative. Sawant's party that's in the declaration.
Which I don't understand. If socialism has a parasitic relationship with capitalism, in that if a capitalism didn't exist, you couldn't have socialism. You had to take the money from the capitalist society, and the socialism then redistributes it, right?
Yeah.
So if you kill capitalism,
that's right.
Then what do you how do you generate in the money? And then all of a sudden it's the state controlling everything, and then you have everybody making $20 a day. You're like in Cuba. You have, and then everybody is equal in that regard. So it's I think it starts with socialism. You suck the life out of the capitalism till finally capitalism dies, and then you go around and then you just hand out these are the nonsense jobs, and this is what everybody's going to get paid. And then you have the system of communism, and then you begin killing people.
I do think that Marx, I don't think that's written in stone, but I do think Marx
to be sort of somehow
a progression
agreed upon,
of things. And that's why it didn't work, say, in Russia, because they skipped that capitalist era. They just went from kind of a rural agrarian society to suddenly, no, you need to have these various steps.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll see how it does. Bernie, by the way, so you are waiting. Let's do quick predictions.
Yes.
So we roll into Super Tuesday, and at that point, we think there's going to be two things that's going to be occurring, an external pressure and internal pressure. External
Before or after Tuesday?
This is after Super Tuesday.
After Super
Tuesday,
yes.
Right out of the bang, in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Internal pressure is the party saying to someone like X, Y, or Z, drop out.
Yeah.
Because there's total, the three of you equal 57%. Mm-hmm. Bernie's at 25. You guys are cannibalizing one another. We've got to be able to come together to get enough money so we can get Bernie out of the picture again, just like we successfully did in 2016. So we need to close Bernie out, guys, so Biden drop out or Amy drop out or Boot get out.
So the hunch is right now Amy Klobuchar looks like the weakest of the five remaining. I mean, we're not even counting Tom Steyer. There's a hunch that if Tom Steyer doesn't do well in South Carolina, and right now he's predicted to come in third, which would be well enough. But if he doesn't come in third, if all of a sudden in the last at the last second, South Carolina Democrats kind of panic and say, he doesn't have a chance. I'm not going to waste my vote on him. If he doesn't do well in South Carolina, he'll drop out. But because it's only 3 days later for Super Tuesday, the hunch is that Klobuchar and Buttigieg will hang around. If Biden wins South Carolina, and right now it looks like he's going to, if he wins South Carolina, he's going to go into Super Tuesday with a fair shot because there are a number of southern states that he might do well with African-American votes. Mm-hmm. But I do think that Amy is probably an early person out. Maybe Buttigieg, at least one of the two of them. And depending on how Warren does, Warren looked good in the last debate. If she does reasonably well, she might hang out. And if you're talking about the pressures of the centrist party, they might not mind Elizabeth Warren hanging out because she does drain some votes, they think, from Bernie because
yes,
she's
true.
More
yeah,
closer
good.
Than Bernie. So she's allowed to stay in.
Yeah.
And then you've got who's the best alternative, and you've got Bloomberg, you know, sort of lording his money over everybody. He'll probably stay in. And then you've got to decide Biden, Buttigieg, or maybe, yeah, Elizabeth Warren.
So where are you?
Well, right now,
let's count the people you're not. You're not going to go Bloomberg. You're not going Amy because you've already shown your hand. You think she's going to get forced out. That leaves you Biden,
right,
Bloomberg.
Yeah, I might go for Warren, but right now I'd vote for Buttigieg. If I had to vote right now, I'd go for Buttigieg.
Okay, fine.
But I like them all.
Oh, they're all terrific.
I'd be happy to have any of them.
Bernie? Happy with Bernie?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if Bernie is sort of like by acclamation the most popular, I feel like, okay, he's not my first choice, but I'd get behind him. If he could knock off Trump like Trump knocked off Hillary, shock the world, that would be something.
Yeah, I think the difference is that they looked at Trump and they said, you know what, let's send a bull into the China shop. Can't be any worse than what we already have. Let's shake things up. Because he's basically coming in as a billionaire slash capitalist, although not quite a billionaire, but he's coming in as a businessman. Businessmen know how to make money. We want to make money. Therefore, let the bull go. Right. Mm-hmm. Bang. Goes into the China shop. Here we go. We're going to send Bernie into the China shop. And do what? Where do you point and say that system has worked? Where? Venezuela? Where? Cuba? That system has worked.
Well,
where?
He
where
has said nice things work? About Denmark, I've heard.
I know he has. Yeah. So 5 million people live in Denmark and they make five.
I know. It's not necessarily applicable, but the idea of having a social safety net that's stronger than we have right now is the push that he's making.
Right. But there's even more than
income inequality.
Right. But there's even more than the social safety. If you want true income equality, go to Cuba. Doesn't everybody make like $20 a day there?
I don't think we want true income inequality. We want it closer.
Oh. Well, I suggested that you take the 1% of all wage earners in the United States, you send them away, and then you'll have almost income inequality.
I don't want to send anybody away.
No. Just hypothetically, if you took them, say, let's take 5% of them and send, that would include me.
Yeah.
So off we would go. So that you would get them out of here.
We would be a lesser place.
Why?
Because I like the fact that we could have you in cages, that we could look at you and say, there goes a rich man.
And in a cage, Tom. What, I got wheels on the cage?
Yeah,
Amazon
it's
doesn't
a big
care.
Cage.
Amazon doesn't care if you shoplift.
Now there's a headline.
Amazon doesn't care if you shoplift from its cashless store.
Okay. I don't know. That's not the article we were reading.
I read this one. I read that one as well. The guy went in to see because he went into the new Amazon Go store and he wanted to find out whether or not you could actually steal something from Amazon. And you can. And I feel bad about giving this information out.
And why are you grinning from year to year?
No, I think it's clever that this guy did this.
This guy tried to see if he could steal things from it. And indeed, he did succeed. How did he succeed? Well, first off, when you go in and show you have a particular ID number in the kiosk that lets you into the store, they take a picture of your face. Okay, they take a picture of who you are. He didn't expect this. As he's walking halfway through, he says, "Hey, there's a bathroom." He goes in, he changes his shirt, he puts on a jacket, he takes off his glasses or puts his glasses on. They do not recognize him when he comes out. So the person that took all the stuff from the store after he changed. Got away with it. The stuff beforehand, he was charged with because they only recognized this particular guy. So if you go in and change, now clearly that's good. This is what you have to do to find out how are people going to screw you over. If people really wanted to get masterful at this, they could do those Mission Impossible, take off the mask.
Nicolas Cage.
That's how he got away with it, and it took him a long time. It took him 4 hours, the store 4 hours, to kind of figure out. Because he did a lot of things. He took a bunch of organic bananas and regular bananas, then switched them behind his back to see if he could throw them off. And he says they ended up getting everything right that they needed to get right until he changed into a different disguise.
Well, there was a time, according to this article, this is 2018, Amazon seemed to invite people to exploit the Go by publicly announcing that it has no way of either knowing or easily detecting items that have been removed and not paid for, and it doesn't even care about the loss at the end of the day. So they wanted people to come in and try to exploit the system to find the flaws
in the system. Yeah, so this was the pre-Amazon Go grocery. This is just Amazon Go. And I assume, as he mentioned before, because he did this and he couldn't get away with it in the Amazon grab-and-go store, he says they've clearly gotten more sophisticated technologically. You look up and you see this bank of cameras following you, and you realize, yeah, you feel like you're in a prison.
Did it feel strange when you were in there, Jacob?
A little surreal. I actually didn't even notice the cameras until my roommate pointed them out to me, and then I looked up and I was like, yeah, that's a little bit creepy, I suppose. They do warn you in some of the instructions that you can't take something off the shelf and then put it in someone else's bag. That's like an interest. That's the only like thing that workaround that they try to tell you not to do.
One other quirk, because this guy. So when you go into the bathroom, they have a tray for you to put all your stuff that you haven't yet purchased on tray. He put one, I forget, like an avocado on the tray, forgot about it, left. And he was charged for that avocado because you can't take an avocado and then stick it in the cereals and then get away with it. If you don't return it to the avocado thing, you will get charged with it. For it.
This is Sean playing a random cut from
Were We Floundering?
It's not necessarily random. You're talking about theft and stealing, so this is Jane's Addiction, Been Caught Stealing. Catch up, John.
All right. Jane's Addiction, the afternoon.
Also, this reporter did say that he's going to return the stuff that he
Okay, good. So don't come after me, Amazon police.
Yeah, don't steal ketchup. Thank you, Sean, for that. There's nothing random about this show.
No, not at all.
All right. Miley. Okay, gender-neutral baby clothes.
Prepositions. Next next up.
Take dangling participles for four under, please, Alex. Gender-neutral baby clothes. It is a quiet radical movement going on. Little did we know that this has been simmering for quite some time now. We have not talked about it. It's our problem.
Apparently, there is a backlash to our hyper-gendered world, John, of newborns. I was unaware of this problem, but then I'm very far away from newborns. But that starts off with a woman profiling the fact that she is trying to go buy some baby clothes. And the person who she's buying baby clothes for doesn't know the sex of the baby. Mm-hmm. And so she wants kind of like gender neutral baby clothes. And she talks about what a hypersexualized world newborns have become, that you cannot even get in the door, basically. If you go online to Amazon, apparently you first have to declare girl baby or boy baby before they even give you entree to buying infant clothing. And so it's an examination of how did this happen? Why are we so hyper-gendered when it comes to baby clothes, because 100 years ago in the Victorian days, everybody, all girls and boys, in fact, I've got, ancestors. I got these old, like 1910 and 1890 shots of families, and the babies are always in these, like, they look
long
like
dressy things.
Yeah, they're real dressy.
You can't tell
with
these, yeah.
Yes, yeah, like, oh, that's fascinating. Well, in Victorian times, which we always think of them as repressed sexual times, in a lot of ways they were, but they thought that it was abnormal to sexualize kids, that kids were really like angels. They were like sexless. They were not creatures that had any kind of sexual motivation. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you shouldn't gender them and accentuate whether they're a girl or a boy at that early a date. And apparently, over history, in 1910, Freud started to change all that. Freud decided that, guess what, everybody? My new theory called psychology says that we are influenced at a very early age on all sorts of matters. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to be a boy who identifies more with the mom because you're dealing with the mom more, you may grow up with mental disorders. And if you're a girl who's raised by a dad, she might identify with a male, and that's going to send off all sorts of disorders. And so at that point, people kind of got freaked out. Mm-hmm. Nothing really changed until the 1980s when amniocentesis became so prevalent, and at that point you could find out the gender of your baby long before the baby was born. And so once marketers got into that and you realized, oh my God, in 3 months I'm going to have a girl or a boy, they figured what a great marketing opportunity that is.
Right.
And so for marketing reasons, they rushed to having girl clothes and boy clothes even as infants.
Well, and that's it.
And now there is a movement afoot. you know, more and more of these retailers are starting to accept gender neutral before a lot of for a lot of various reasons. But some have to do with the rise of transgender recognition. But they said, but there are other things about it that they don't want to kind of force. Like, not every boy's going to want to grow up with a, you know, being a truck driver, but, you know, putting a truck on a shirt to identify him as a boy seems excessive.
I got news for you. Kid just doesn't even know. Okay.
Exactly.
Kid doesn't even know he's got a truck on.
That's
or a
right.
dinosaur on or something.
So why pay for that truck?
Because
why
it's just cute. You put a truck on.
Yeah, you think it's cute. But what some parents want. No, I know the kid doesn't know. But some parents want just gender neutral. So you have something that could be worn by a boy or a girl. They also said a lot of hand-me-downs. Now, I don't know how many. I mean, in my family, you know, we always had hand-me-downs. But I don't know how many, you know, five kid families there are, let alone 10 or 12, but if you buy something, you can pass it down. If it's a boy to a girl to a boy to a girl, then why not have gender neutral? So there is a quiet push in the retail industry to allow for gender neutral clothes. That's what the article's about.
So they want the kid to wear gray?
Well, gray is, that's one of the unfortunate options, they say, is that, yeah, instead of, you know, in effect, black and white, you just put gray, everything is just gray. They say, but no, right now, there are a number of companies, apparel companies that are pushing. We've got colors, everybody, because the standard would be the go-to bland clothes. No, we want colorful. You know, we want color in our presentation, and so they're working in color.
But don't you think you put if you put a boy in pink, then everybody assumes it's a boy. So then, oh, how old is your girl?
No,
what's your
pink.
Girl's name?
Yeah. Right? If they assume
right,
it's a girl,
then you take your kid out. So yes. You put him in blue, it's a boy, then the girl. Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
And at this point, they don't. They're saying, why do we need to know? Maybe the Victorians had it right on that particular score. They say, yeah. How many times have you seen it? I have seen this where you got this perfectly bald kid, you know, baby, mm-hmm. and they basically put a tape, a pink bow or a blue bow on it just to identify gender. Why bother? Just put a good gray one on, John.
Or just go advanced hair in Bellevue, and they'll move the baby hair from the back of the head.
Right.
So I looked up to see what the average age was of people in England in the 1830s and 40s.
Wow. Okay,
so you could marry a 12-year-old girl.
Wow,
you could boy a boy, be 14 years old, and marry. Because let's assume you're only living to 30 or something like
that.
Well,
that's true.
So then you just keep moving that time back. So then all of a sudden, well, she's a 12-year-old girl who's got to get married.
Yeah.
So at the age of what does she become sexualized, right? So you try to keep it as sort of non-sexual as long as possible.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, because then you start looking at a 10-year-old as possible marriage material.
Yeah.
And you're some gross guy with a withered hand.
Yeah. I think most guys would be pretty gross to a 10-year-old girl, whether to hand or no, John. But
I threw
still,
that in just to push him over.
Yeah, I see.
Why did you always have? I always mention withered hand because I paint pictures with boards. Do you have a friend or a relative with a withered hand? Is that what it is?
It feels unnecessary.
Oh, we're going to lose the withered hand.
Why hard
audience?
Enough with a withered hand not to have it pointed out by you for a joke every 3 months.
No, it's just like you seem overly sensitive. No. You're afraid that we're going to lose the withered hand audience?
I hope we do. You deserve it.
You're not going to lose them, Tom. They got nowhere to go. Seriously, you laugh like you assume we're going to get a bunch of text messages from people with withered hands.
No, by me acknowledging what a jerk you can be to people with withered hands, I'm hoping to stop the
Every
flood.
Every 3 months I mention it. Again, I'm painting pictures. I could have mentioned something else.
That's right. You could have.
Luckily,
we should count our blessings.
You know, remember
right?
people when I was a kid? Used to have the guy with the giant heel. The one leg would be shorter than the other.
Remember
that?
Yeah,
I don't see that as much anymore.
No.
I think I could go to that.
Yeah. Okay.
All
yeah.
right. So from now on,
short-legged man.
So a gross guy looking at a 12-year-old got like a giant heel. How's that?
No, but I don't think that you need any kind of physical infirmity to make that a gross picture. You're just piling on at that point.
Is anybody
what are we
still
talking
listening?
About? I hope not.
Well, you don't have any time to get to the next topic.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Right? Because that's a long one. But gender pronouns can be tricky on campus at Harvard. I was just hoping Sean would have thrown in that annoying traffic music earlier. Why did you save us? When you see us floundering around, bring the music in.
Okay.
You want a sign? You want like an international sign for help us?
No, well, I mean, I generally think that you're always floundering. And so you sometimes get a bunch of words to string together that makes sense.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, okay, next time you're floundering, which
so
Tom
like
never does.
Looking for the flopsam and jetsam to grab onto, just sort of pull ourselves up just temporarily to the commercial break, right?
Yeah.
Like a floating tree trunk.
What are you talking about?
All right, moving on. Let's check traffic. How about the attorney that explains There's so many lawsuits when it comes to music, right?
Yes.
We often do this.
Copyright music.
Every 6 months we do, well, this sounds a lot like...
Yeah, Petty went after Sam Smith, and he won millions of dollars for
and
copyright
blurred lines and all that other stuff. Okay, and I think Vanilla Ice ran into some problems. So the problem is, according to this guy, this attorney...
We've discovered that there is only so many melodies. There are only so many notes that can be arranged in so many ways. And that's different than, say, visual art, where there are an infinite number of brushstrokes and an infinite number of colors and an infinite number of subjects... that to accidentally do them is very difficult. Similarly, with language, the English language has 117,000 words in it. So the odds of accidentally writing the same paragraph are next to zero. In contrast, music doesn't have 117,000 words. Music has 8 notes. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And every popular melody that's ever existed and ever can exist is those 8 notes.
But what about sharps and flats?
Yeah, I think you got him there, John.
I think I did.
There
Look
was
at him
a
showing
boy.
Off. There, right? Latido. He explains what they do and try to solve the problem. Here we go. This is pretty nutty that this app can do this so quickly.
Fascinating.
Here we go.
So I approached my colleague Noah. I said, Noah, can you write an algorithm to be able to march through every melody that's ever existed and ever can exist? He said, yeah, I could do that. So at a rate of 300,000 melodies.
This has got to be a TED Talk.
It is.
They are the easiest laugh. Audience. Those TED Talk audiences. Also, his imitation of Noah is really bad. Listen to this again.
Yeah, I could do that. So at a rate of 300,000 melodies per second, he wrote a program to write to disk every melody that's ever existed and ever can exist. And in my hand right now is every melody that's ever existed and ever can exist. And the thing is, to be copyrighted, you don't have to do anything formal. As soon as it's written to a fixed, tangible medium, this hard drive, it's copyrighted automatically. Now, you might think at this point, are you some sort of copyright troll that's trying to take over the world? And I would say, no, I am not. Absolutely not. In fact, the opposite is true. Noah and I are songwriters ourselves. We want to make the world better for songwriters. So what we've done is we're taking everything and putting it in the public domain. We're trying to keep space open for songwriters to be able to make music.
Okay.
That's absolutely fascinating. You and I think are both skeptical about really every single
like Noah,
melody.
Really? Yeah. He's a little too quick to jump on that project.
That's right. But even if they could do something like that, they say that legally we don't know if this has any merit. That can you really copyright everything and anything? Here's the argument that if a note is just seen as a fact, you can't copyright facts.
Yes.
So if you put this note, you know, if there are only 8 notes, and as you pointed out, there's sharps and all that, too. But if you take 8 notes, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you just give them a number. Uh-huh. That's a fact. You can then string a number of facts together to make it copyrightable. If that's really what they did with an algorithm, then that might not hold up in court as a legitimate copyright.
Plus, there's also rests and there's beats.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And someone's going to hold for 2 beats, or you rest for a whole note or a half note. There's also that is included in there as well. They're just simply writing out, I guess, just the sort of binary 0 and 1, or in this case, the 8 notes in every single combination that could possibly be in.
Yes, but there must be a lot of combinations, because if they do 300,000 in a second, that already there are 300,000 melodies. What would be interesting now is if they are songwriters, do they just go and crib for their own stuff? Hey, let's see what melody 3,423 is. Let's write a song of that.
And then grab that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why the people that do that? Woo! Like, only at concerts and stuff do people make that noise. You notice that the person did it at this TED Talk at the end?
Yeah.
You know, we're not, woo!
Yeah.
Yeah, I was at Brandi Carlile on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And she...
Even with the symphony, eh?
Yeah, they did it. A bunch of people did it at the symphony.
Yeah.
And it's like, there must be the same person must do that at every single concert.
It could be, but there is a tradition within symphony halls of shouting bravo or
no,
brava.
No, this was at every... Yeah, because there's always somebody... Yeah. And it's always, I think they're doing that in case somebody's recording it, because then they can hear themselves. There's a Jackson Brown album. There's an annoying woman, probably with some type of, like a
withered hand.
Well, maybe a short leg.
Does this count as floundering?
Yeah. Amen, brother.
Preach it.
I told you he was God.
I was going somewhere.
Where? Off the rails?
No.
Why don't you toss it to Miley?
Miley, hello.